loudest fly award goes to that one that just zipped by my head.
Hey there, how you doing? Gonna record a podcast?
Meow.
Any chance you got some dung I could eat?
Some dung? I haven't heard somebody say some dung since I was in the seventh grade at the zoo.
Do you talk to many flies? Do you talk to us at all?
Anyway. I don't think flies would use the word dung. I think they would be a little bit more informal.
Mm.
Use the word poo-poo. Who wanted the poo-poo platter?
And welcome back to another episode of Who Is My Doctor?
Who is my doctor?
Who is indeed? I am your host, Zach, and I know a lot about Doctor Who.
And I'm also your host, Cassie. And guess what?
What is it, Cassie?
I kind of was very excited to record this particular upcoming next episode. Yeah, it has nothing to do with it being called Dinosaurs on a Spaceship. But if it did have something to do with dinosaurs being on a spaceship, then, you know.
So what did it have to do with, if not?
I just wanted to see the intro again. The one we didn't like.
You're excited to meet Rory's dad.
Oh, no, I'm good.
Yeah, this episode features the first appearance of Rory Williams' father.
Father Rory.
He's not a priest.
Rarther. Dad Dory.
This is Series 7, Episode 2, Dinosaurs on a Spaceship.
See, there's
in
a...
space.
There is a song... by the Shiny Toy Guns that came out on, I forget which album. I think the album itself came out in like 2011, 12. Mm-hmm. But it's literally called My Reptile Friend. And it's awesome because it's literally about, I'm sure that there might be some subtext about it being about losing a friend, losing a very old friend perhaps. But the chorus is, goodbye, my reptile friend. Do do do, do do do, do do do. But in the background, you just hear.
Obviously, the reptile friend.
Yeah, it's very good, and it's one of those songs that when I'm by myself doing my car karaoke, perfection.
Is this car karaoke or is this stimming?
Get back on that. We'll circle back.
So what might you be expecting from an episode called Dinosaurs on a Spaceship, Cassie?
Let me
reverse the question. What level of dinosaur are you looking for on
what
this
level
spaceship?
Of dinosaur? Yeah. Okay, so you are sidestepping my bit of restating the obvious.
Yes, because gotcha. I already know where this is going. So instead, I'll just jump right ahead and say, how many dinosaurs would are you wanting in this episode? How many would you need before you feel satisfied?
What number? Because here's the thing. I was not a dinosaur autistic growing up. No, not diagnosed or signs.
A dinoconosaur.
But I definitely am part of the camp that is very upset that the dinosaurs in the Jurassic Park are not from the Jurassic period.
Mm-hmm.
So when you ask what level of dinosaurs, are you asking what kind of dinosaurs? Like big scary ones being like a level 10 dinosaur, like little brontosaurus.
I mean like the quantity of dinosaur.
So the quantity, yeah. The number of dinos.
Yeah, and you could read that as like the individual dinosaurs or the number of species that you see.
15 feels like an awful lot.
It does feel like an awful lot for an episode of Doctor Who. Like at what point would you feel like it justifies the title Dinosaurs on a Spaceship?
Like dinosaurs, like obviously more than one. So there's at least two dinos.
Okay.
But then it comes to the question of, would it be more interesting if there were like three really big ones or like 10 small ones?
So the little spitters that spit up on
Dilophosaurus. Yeah.
The ones that spit on.
Yeah. Dilophosaurus.
Wayne.
My favorite name for a dinosaur. Dilophosaurus.
I think it's Dilophosaurus.
Dilophosaurus. Here's the thing. When I was in high school, college, I was older. I had a friend who was coming out, and the way that he really wanted to like confirm his queerness is that he gave me a toy dinosaur that he had purchased and said, make it gay. And so I painted it rainbow, just the like frill around the neck, and it's like little nails.
You made an LGBT Rex?
Yeah, a Dilophosaurus. Because he had called it something else, but I always liked calling it D-I-L-F, thesaurus.
Yeah.
Or dildophosaurus. I also thought was really funny, too.
Yeah, that feels about right for you.
Yeah.
So basically, you really want to see a dildophosaurus is what you're getting at.
I think those like are aesthetically like some of the more like interesting ones, because they do have the... Plus, we do have... The scary little lizards in Australia that have the same.
Sorry, how did that go, Cassie?
We still have like living relatives of something with similar biology. Yeah, that's the word. The other ones I really like are like the bird dinosaurs that I can never, ever remember.
Like Archaeopteryx?
Archaeopteryx, thank you. I love those ones. They are my favorite.
Can I tell you the sad reason why I remember Archaeopteryx?
Archaeopteryx.
Because in Yu-Gi-Oh! GX,
oh, no.
Season 2, there's a character that is obsessed with dinosaurs, and all of his cards are dinosaur-based. But his voice specifically is somewhere like this. It's got like a real, like...
Like Professor DNA, but more like if you mixed him with Crocodile Dundee.
A little bit. Like there's a little bit of like a Texas Crocodile Hunter vibe to him. They sort of give him like a military voice, but his voice just like scratches a brainstem for me. And so I very specifically remember him summoning a monster called Archaeopteryx.
Gotcha. You're special brain.
Just our little millennial brains are so very cooked by all the media that we consumed as children.
Cooked.
Well, now that we know a little bit about that, let's talk about the Cassie
Brothers. About that. Well, you don't want me to go through the list of my favorite dinosaurs?
I mean, are there any other dinosaurs you're really hoping to see?
Like an Allosaurus, I always like, just because they look like T-Rexes, but they're a little bit dumpier. Or a Spinosaurus. Oh, okay. My God, those bitches are scary. They're all pretty scary. Brontosaurus. Could you imagine a Brontosaurus on a spaceship? It's too tall.
I think, didn't they discover that Brontosauruses aren't real? Aren't they Apatosauruses? I don't know. I can't remember. Maybe it's the other way around. I wasn't really a dinosaur kid either.
Stegos. Love a good stego.
See, I might have been more of a dinosaur kid if I wasn't terrified by the dinosaur riot at Disney World.
Fucking fair, bitch. Oh, my God. Of all Disney rides I think I have ever done, which, like, humble brag, have done a lot of Disney rides in my life. Dinosaur Escape from Extinction or whatever the
countdown
fuck.
Countdown to Extinction.
Yeah, Countdown to Extinction. That shit is so scary. Sometimes, very late at night, when I'm getting up to go to the bathroom and it's a little bit extra very dark, I'm like, oh no, there's a mechanical dinosaur waiting in the dark. Even though they make it so damn dark because...
It's just like the heads. Like,
shit's breaking all the time and they don't move. So they make it as dark as they do to not only make it scary, but to also cover up the fact that they were closing the ride down.
Yeah.
But gee willikers.
Well, let's get into the Cassie for Fassie
now. I'm so glad Aladon was there to help us. Anyways, Aladar, sorry.
So just as a brief reminder from last episode, because last time was the first time we did it. In addition to the Cassie for Fassie, I'm also playing a little game for myself that I call Cassie's Favorite Moment.
Uh-huh.
So I will, we'll see how...
There's got to be a better name for that, though.
Yeah, maybe. Well, I mean, it's only our second time doing it, so maybe we'll come up with a better name. with time. But in the meantime, though, we do still have our two question Cassie Profassi, as is tradition. First,
which
up,
also, for the record, right now, my average is pretty good.
Yeah, you're doing pretty
I have
well.
115 correct out of 182 guesses.
Nice.
Yeah.
See, not too shabby. Let's see if we can get you some more points today. Mm-hmm. The first one is a little open-ended, but I think also for you, there's only so many answers you could give. This episode has not one, but two actors prominently featured in another big British franchise.
Oh, no.
Can you guess which franchise?
Oh, no. Which franchise?
Mm-hmm.
Was Gallivant? No, Gallivant was
Gallivant was
here.
Disney.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay. Other British franchise.
Mm-hmm.
Sherlock?
So you're talking, Sherlock Holmes would count.
I'm more asking and saying which ones, because literally my only, here is my only exposure. You ready for this?
Mm-hmm.
Sherlock.
Mm-hmm.
Monty Python.
Okay.
The Mighty Boosh.
Okay.
Mr. Bean.
Okay.
And Father Ted.
There's more than that.
Father Ted, those are the only ones that I can summon right now. And Father Ted isn't even British. That one's
I mean, there's
Irish.
Two. I'm looking at two right now. There's James Bond and Harry Potter.
Yeah, but Harry Potter was made here. It wasn't a British company that made it. Warner Brothers.
I mean, sort of, but it was also made in the UK with British actors. Like, they filmed at Oxford. Also, I would say that given the author, I would still source it to the UK, even if they were adapted.
Fair.
Because James Bond was also a book franchise before it was a movie franchise.
Can I also be super, super honest with you? I don't know squat about James Bond.
No, okay.
What was the question?
This episode features not one, but two actors from a prominent British franchise. Can you guess
which
franchise?
So two actors from one franchise.
Yes.
Okay.
And all you have to do is guess the franchise. You don't have to guess which actors. You just have to guess where they come, where we have seen them from.
Where we have seen them from.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So it is something then that you and I will both know. Wouldn't it be wild if it was Rowan Atkinson? I can't think of they just fully bring in Mr. Bean.
They bring in the doctor from Curse of Fatal Death.
Nice. Okay,
I'll
so
explain later.
I would have to then guess if it's something that you and I have both seen. I mean, Harry Potter feels like the only answer that is something that you and I both seen, because I famously have not watched any Sherlock either.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. So you're going to.
So the only person I really know from that, and it would be unfair if you picked something that I wouldn't know, is Benny Boo Cumberbing.
Benny Boo Cumberbing, and also Martin Freeman is also one. I would also say Lord of the Rings counts as a British franchise, because that was also one that sort.
Yeah, but that was in New Zealand.
They filmed it in New Zealand,
like,
but again, the books
much.
Were written in the UK.
Okay.
So Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, the Chronicles of Narnia, that would definitely count as well, because those are also books that were written in the UK.
Well, now this question became really unfair, hadn't it?
I mean, I wouldn't say it's unfair. It's just open-ended.
Rude.
Makes you feel better. The next one I have narrowed down to four choices, so you have...
Okay, but even still, I don't know. I tell people all the time.
I mean, you would...
After I watch something, after an interaction I do fails, I forget all about it. So if it's a movie series or something I haven't seen in a minute, it's gone.
I mean, I will say Harry Potter's just a pretty safe bet, because I think they cast the entirety of the UK in Harry Potter.
Yeah, I think I'm just going to cheat a little bit and say Harry Potter, because I truly, truly cannot think of any other actor ever.
Okay.
Other than like Lord of the Rings, maybe, because I know that that's something you and I have sat down to watch.
Okay. Would you like the chance for a bonus point?
Yeah.
Okay, so I told you that we meet Rory's father.
Oh, no.
In this. If you were to pick an actor from the Harry Potter franchise to play Rory's father.
Am I correct with Harry Potter?
I'm not going to tell you, but I'm going to let you say, assuming Harry Potter is correct.
Okay.
Which this is also just a fun little exercise, just because I want to hear what you think. Which actor from the Harry Potter franchise would you pick to play Rory's father?
Not assuming that they're playing the same type of character, just simply... Who would be?
Yeah, just I mean, when if you were to like just look at the cast of the Harry Potter franchise and pluck one out to be you're playing Rory's dad now. Who would you pick?
Can I ask if they're similar to Rory or like extreme opposite?
They're not super similar, but they're definitely not extreme opposites. They give a similar vibe, but they're not exactly the same.
Okay. Because my first instinct was Mr. Filch.
Okay.
Just because, like, looks wise, not even like looks wise, but just like, I know that the actor playing Mr. Filch is not Filch. Mm-hmm. So if I'm simply picking an
old man.
Yeah. At that point, or what's his face? I can see his face so bright in my mind. I can see him in every other film I've seen where I go, oh, hey, that's...
I mean, what's the... You don't know the character's name?
No! I'm blanking out on everything.
Okay.
He's Harold in Moulin Rouge. I can tell you that.
You're talking... Oh, he was also in Curse of Fatal Death.
Was he?
Yeah, he was one of the other doctors. He was the one that was awkward around women.
So, like, if I'm going to pick...
You're talking about Slughorn.
Yes. Because I could remember... Here's where my brain went. I remembered Club Slug, because that's what he called his, like...
Jim Broadbent, that's his
name. Jim Broadbent, thank you. I'm going to guess him.
Okay, Jim Broadbent.
Yeah.
Okay. That's a fun little bonus point, I guess. I totally see that too. I totally get how you come to that idea. Just sort of like,
well, I'm trying to think of like who else could possibly play Rory's dad. Mm-hmm. And it would be like some other side character that was there for a little bit. Wouldn't that be funny if it was David Tennant? As he is also,
because they're basically the same age.
Yeah, basically.
They just put him in a gray wig.
But Jim Broadbent, I feel like, is a very safe bet, and mm-hmm. something that I'm like, oh, I would like to see that.
Okay. All right. So just if you are correct, we'll say that if Jim Broadbent is playing Rory's father, you will get a bonus point. It won't. And by bonus point, I mean, you don't have to count it as a third question. You just get 2 points for one question. And then the second part of the Cassie Profassie today is a multiple choice question.
Okay. Lay it on me.
In this episode, in addition to the pawns, the doctor brings a couple of other companions along with him this time, including one historical leader.
Oh, man.
This is multiple choice. To make this fun, I have picked four different historical leaders that are actually in Doctor Who episodes.
Oh, no.
One is from Classic. One is from this episode. And two are from episodes we haven't seen yet in the modern series. Is it A, King James I of England?
Okay.
Queen Nefertiti of Egypt?
Ooh, interesting.
Grigory Rasputin of Russia?
Oh.
Emperor Nero of Rome?
Uh-huh.
Those are your four choices.
Nefertiti. I think that one would be fun.
You think it's Nefertiti?
Well, because I know that there is always that discourse of, like, there is the ongoing discourse of, like, the way that we see time is linear when there were many things happening at once, such as ancient Egyptians being alive during the Ice Age. So they were alive at the same time as woolly mammoths and... We don't see time that way.
You're talking about when the fixed point in time broke and all of time happened at once?
No. Like, genuinely speaking. Like,
oh, okay.
Like, because ancient Egypt in particular is so unbelievably old, and we don't the pyramids of Giza were ancient by the time that Cleopatra was in reign.
Okay, now I understand.
Like, stuff like that, where it's like, oh, you just, we think of it as like one block of time that spanned over 200 years, when the actual truth of the matter is civilizations like ancient Egypt were thousands of years old.
All right.
So because of that, I think it would be very interesting if you had somebody that had something of like approximate knowledge of dinosaurs.
even if
you're just doing like a silly willy timey wimey bullshit type thing.
Okay.
But I'm also unsure when Nefertiti was.
All right. I think it's a fair justification.
That's what I want to see.
Mm-hmm.
Because Nero fucking sucks.
Knowing that all four of them will be in future episodes. Were there any of those that made you excited to see what happens when we get there?
Nefertiti, yes. Okay, or Rasputin.
Nefertiti and Rasputin. Okay.
Well, mostly because in my head, I forget that Rasputin is not animated, nor is he followed around by a bat.
Yeah, he is not. He is not a lich, a Dungeons and Dragons lich.
Yeah, he is not a lich voiced by Christopher Lloyd, nor does he have a silly little sidekick voiced by Hank Azaria.
Oh, hello there, doctor. How you doing?
First, I give her a ha. and a hi-ya and a hoo-wah. And then I kick her, sir.
Well, let's find out together if this episode features two prominent actors from the Harry Potter franchise and if the Doctor brings along Queen Nefertiti of Egypt as we watch Dinosaurs on a Spaceship.
Hooray!
Millions of years ago, dinosaurs roamed the Earth. Yet for millions, billions of years before that, this planet was teeming with life. Yet the only creatures to get their own theme park are dinosaurs? Nay, I say. For on my island off the coast of Madagascar, I bring to you the next wonder of the world. Welcome to Proterozoic Park. Hello, I'm Films TV's Paul Porkrind, and I invite you to see the astounding feats from before the Cambrian explosion. Yes, you've seen dinosaurs rip apart cars and fences, but now be amazed to see ancient microbes photosynthesize. That's right, take a thrilling 14-hour tram ride through 900 square miles of primeval swamp water to maybe, just maybe, catch a glimpse of a eukaryotic cell. Shiver in terror at the sight of mythical medusoids. They're like early jellyfish, or maybe just like weird blobs. Either way, they're gelatinous and generationally confusing. Ooh. And don't miss our recently renovated Red Algae Pavilion, now with 30% more biofilm. It's red. It's algae. It's somewhere on that rock over there. Proterozoic Park, where life technically finds a way. Slowly. Very, very slowly.
Oh god, I'm ruined. I spared no expense with this. Why didn't I spare a single expense? And we are back from Dinosaurs on a Spaceship.
He said it.
He did say it.
He said it.
He did indeed say. He did indeed said it.
We got to watch the new intro again, which I still hate.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of it. It's just, and it's the sad thing is, it's not. I wouldn't mind it if it was like a one-off, but because it's a few episodes in a row, I kind of like the color is just too dark.
I don't mind the colors. I truly mind the font.
Yeah, I don't even mind the font. I mind the like fade in that doesn't really like cue up with anything. I think we talked about this last episode.
Yeah, I just wanted to mention it again.
But what did you think of Dinosaurs on a Spaceship, Cassie?
I thought it was okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, this was written by the showrunner that takes over after Stephen Moffat, Chris Chibnall. So if you're curious what the show will look like under his run, these are the vibes you can go off of.
Bud, I can't tell the difference. I'm not that picky.
Fair enough. You do get 2 points today because you are correct. Both
Filch and Arthur Weasley.
Yes, Mark Williams plays Brian Williams, and David Bradley plays Solomon. So yes, that is Arthur Weasley and Argus Filch from Harry Potter are our two little guests today. And you were also correct; it was Queen Nefertiti of Egypt.
Hell yeah!
And you seem to enjoy her the entire time.
Yeah, I mean, because you and I had this conversation not too long ago about how like an affliction that the writers of this show seem to give women is that they are both horny, but very capable and smart.
Mm-hmm.
And like,
there's a very like femme fatale angle that gets given to just a lot of women.
And Queen Nefertiti is by no means an excuse from that because she is very capable and a little bit horny. Mm-hmm. But if there is going to be a trope that the women of this show fall into, horny and capable is one that's very easy to get behind.
Because there's also just not a lot of shows that do that.
No.
Yeah.
No, making women smart? What do you think this is?
Giving women, like, control over their own sexuality?
And their own decision-making and not making a man choose for them?
Yeah.
Zach.
Yeah, there's a little fetishy coming from a man, but at the same time, I do agree that there's times where if you have to do a trope over and over again, there are worse ones you could pick.
Yes.
So you said you thought it was okay.
Yeah, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I'm not good at picking apart this. This is why people side with me, because I'm simple.
That's why they call you Simple Shima.
Yep. I don't know. I don't know if it was the pacing or just the.
There was
not a lot of banter. It was just something where I found myself kind of disappearing. And
well, this is one of those where I think it feels. I don't know if it feels like a classic episode, but there's an episode. It feels very inconsequential. Like, it doesn't feel like it's tying into a lot of greater stuff.
No.
But it also is just meant to be like a good, it's almost like a popcorn film version of a Doctor Who episode.
That's fair.
Like, they're not doing any, like, series long story arc gobbledygook. I think the most you really get is this introduces Rory's dad, who does come back.
It introduces Rory's dad. It does build more upon the Silurians.
Yeah, it builds more on the Silurians, but you know, you don't need to know all of that stuff. You can just sort of like sit down and watch this and not think about the stuff that comes before or after, really.
Yeah.
But on that subject, what did you think of Brian, Rory's father?
I'm so glad they let Arthur Weasley look at the Earth from a great distance with his little thermos of tea and sandwich.
Would you perchance consider that to be your favorite moment of the episode, Cassie?
I think so.
Okay, cool, because that's what I wrote down.
Hooray! Yeah, I did make a little note of it because I was like, oh, that's so cute. They let Arthur Weasley see all of the muggles from space. Yep,
specifically, I wrote it as Brian eating lunch while looking down at the Earth.
It's just cute. It's a nice visual, and it was a well executed visual.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
because like you can still, I mean, it's a TV show, but it wasn't. It didn't look clunky or weird.
Well, there's a part of it that sort of like weirdly for a sci-fi show, there's like a grounding to it where
we're
so used to going off on these big grand adventures.
Arthur is genuinely just there for the ride. Mm-hmm. He didn't ask to be there, but if he's going to be there, he's going to get something out of it.
Yeah. And what he wants is very simple. And I like that he even gets his own like character arc in a way where they say that he doesn't like to travel. He doesn't like going places. He only really goes to the shop and to the post office at home.
Mm-hmm.
And then, but at the end of the episode, because he's been on this adventure, he's like, oh, I want to see, I got to see the whole world at once. And now I can go everywhere.
Yeah. So you see his little handmade postcards, postcards from Rio, from Italy.
That all have a picture of him saying, I am here.
Yeah. Like I said, very clearly homemade.
And you had briefly asked if to get the TARDIS in that last one on Siluria with the dinosaurs, if the 11th Doctor has Photoshop in the TARDIS.
Yeah, which I definitely think the TARDIS absolutely helped him make that. Specifically because she knew, oh, this is going to Rory and
there's no way Brian knows how to work a printer.
Oh. I am a little bit upset that we didn't get to see all of the dinosaurs get loaded up into the TARDIS and then taken back.
Well, because they didn't get taken back. They got taken to the new planet. They got taken to Siluria, the planet they went to at the end. That's why they were all in those pictures, because they steered the ship away.
So I'm upset we didn't get dinosaurs in the TARDIS.
Dinosaurs on a TARDIS.
That'd be
a totally different episode.
Weirdly, though, I did like Rydell.
Well, there's something to be said about a character that's just like a lovable asshole. Like, he definitely sucks, but the show knows that he sucks. And so, but they lean into like, why does the Doctor hang out with this guy that kind of sucks? And it's because, oh, he's funny.
He's charismatic.
Yeah, he's charismatic. And there's just an entertainment value to having around a guy that's just like, ah, yes, the hunt.
That genuinely is one of my favorite character tropes of all time. One of my actual favorite short stories is A Most Dangerous Game.
Mm-hmm.
I love it. For that reason, I just love pretentious assholes who are in for the hunt, whether or not it is actually, if it's large game or the most dangerous predator around. Mankind.
Well, I think there's a certain part of it where it's like there's like a little bit of like, let's make him a sexist character. But then it sort of turns and it's like, oh, well, this isn't sexism. Like his value is in like strength and power. And so the second Nefertiti like starts displaying it against him, they're both very clearly into each other because of it.
Yeah.
Because Nefertiti describes her husband as a walking sleeping potion.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's something about like, you know, the big strong man shows up with his big gun and chick, and I go, oh, no, don't shoot me with your big gun.
Is this a fantasy you have, Zach?
No, I don't like guns.
What if they're like tranquilizer guns, though?
I never would.
Okay.
As the 10th Doctor shakes the gun in front
of you. Oh, jeez. Oh, man. All right. I was trying to do a bit. Never mind. Moving right along. 1, 2, 3, 4 types of dinosaurs.
At least, yeah.
Well, because there was pterodactyls, there was triceratops, raptors, and ankylosauruses.
Yeah, I think there was also, I think it was supposed to be like a baby T-Rex at one point.
That was a raptor because it had the same jaw.
No, I meant when there was a sleeping one that was a baby T-Rex that they had to like step over.
Okay.
I thought they had said it was a baby T-Rex.
I thought it was raptors.
Either way, it doesn't really matter. We got a small variety of dinosaurs from the Land Before Time collection.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting having these other characters included in it because you would think that
characters, aka the Doctor's gang, it's new.
Because you would think the episode would feel like crowded or congested with all these characters, but the show, it does a really good job of like balancing all of them.
Yeah, well, because then they can split up like a Scooby-Doo gang.
Yeah, and they all have like different dynamics with one another. Like they're like clearly Rydell and Nefertiti have a different relationship than Rydell and Amy do, because Amy sees right through Rydell's like cocksure bullshit.
I really do like that Nefertiti asks Amy if she's a queen and she immediately says yes.
I also like the look on her face when she says it to just, yes, I am. Just that thing where you like kind of lower your eyebrows a little bit, like you're trying not to be seen through.
Like it's definitely stinky behavior, but it's also like so inconsequential.
Yeah. And like, what are they going to do? And then eventually Amy does have to take it back when she realizes that stating it means that she's saying I'm Rory's queen. She's like, please don't say I was Rory's queen. I'll never hear the end of it.
I mean, I refer to myself as my queen in my phone. So when I ask Siri to do something for me, she goes, yes, my queen.
That's pretty good. I do like that.
Awesome.
So if the robots ever take over, they might worship you just by accident.
Yeah.
Speaking of robots, this episode also had two big dumb robots.
Yep. Love myself some big dumb robots.
Played by two comedians that I mostly know from the Are We the Baddies sketch. Have I ever played that for you?
No. And you confirmed they were not in Mighty Boosh.
Yeah, they were not in Mighty Boosh. And I couldn't tell. I didn't see anything about them being anything else you had mentioned either.
Okay.
But their names are David Mitchell and Robert Webb. They're part of a comedy duo called Mitchell and Webb. Creative name. I recognize them from a sketch called Are We the Baddies. Early, I think it's called Are We the Baddies, which is a sketch where a Nazi soldier suddenly realizes how fucked up their costumes are. And he looks to another one and is like, there's a skull on our hat. Are we the baddies? And it's a really good sketch. I have to play it for you later. But that's what I know them from. I'm a little surprised they weren't on anything like that, because to my knowledge, they're fairly successful British comedians. They had their own show.
Hmm.
But they're very silly. I don't know that they were as funny as I think the episode wanted them to be.
No, I mean, I did appreciate, because I said there wasn't a lot of banter. There was banter between them two.
Yeah. I think the funniest part of it wasn't even really like a line they had said. It was the doctor like running out from the office being like, oh, he wants to see you, as they run away from the robots and the robots lean in like, you wanted to see us.
Yeah.
And they're like, what are you doing? Go after them. There's a part of it that's like, I do like the setup of two robot lackeys that are just stupid.
I like that it doesn't necessarily even seem that they're stupid. It's that they are so old. Because they even say they are millennia old.
Yeah, they're like.
So there's a part of me that's like, oh, so the joke there is just that they are so out of date.
They're like children almost. Or like, they're like big, strong children.
Not even children. They're like extremely old people. They are geriatrics.
Yeah.
But with the advantage of being a robot, so they don't actually have, like, their body is deteriorating, but not in the same way that, like, flesh and bone does.
Yeah, so I like, they're not my favorite part of the episode because I don't think they're as funny as the show wants them to be, but I don't dislike them either. I'm not mad that they're there. They also work, especially if they're going to make David Bradley your bad guy, a man who appears to weigh 100 pounds soaking wet.
Yeah, for real.
Especially because, like, whatever the like robe they put him in makes him look even skinnier because it clings to his arms.
Genuinely and looks like an old cat.
Yeah. But he really works as the villain, though. I mean, that's why they cast him.
A as villain Phil's. Named Solomon, too. Jeez.
And he's got this like constant sneering, like grin, like I'm going to sell you on the black market.
Because when he says that he did a DNA scan and found something that the doctor has that's extremely precious, I thought he was going to ask for the TARDIS.
I thought he was, too, every time I watched this. I often think he's like, oh, he's going to ask for the TARDIS. But I like that because the doctor has erased himself from the universe's databases, he is worthless and no one knows what the TARDIS is. So instead,
when did that happen?
That happened between seasons. The part of why it was so difficult to find the doctor in the Asylum of the Daleks, why they had to like basically create a weird distress signal robot woman, was because otherwise you could not find him. So that was basically what he did after he died. After he died, he had erased himself from all the databases in the universe. So he gets to be an enigma, a mystery. Ooh.
He gets to be Natasha Lyonne in this season of Poker Face. Spoiler, I guess.
Yeah, I like that touch. And so I like that no one really knows who he that when I like that they found a way to make that have consequences, even if the consequences that instead of him being chased, it's Nefertiti.
Mm-hmm.
They find a way to, like, even though the doctor has like scrubbed himself, there are consequences to that action. And so I like that quite a bit.
But I like that Nefertiti makes that decision on her own.
Yeah. When he's like, he's never going to give her up. He's never going to let her down.
You're going to turn around. And you mean, yeah. Okay. You're so funny and clever. You should put that in your tight five.
You know what? I will. It'll require a lot of setup to get here, but I will do it.
Okay. We turn the microphone off, and that's Zach's Tight Five. Good night, everybody. Thanks for coming. This has just been one large setup to reveal that you've been working on stand-up material.
For the last year and a half.
Yeah. People are actively giving us money only for you to be like, well, yep, it's just been me working on my own thing.
What's the deal with the doctor? It's like, Doctor Who? Don't you mean Doctor Whom?
That was really dumb.
What's the deal with TARDIS food?
No, I was going to say that. Because there's an
old... You like the BBC Symphonic Orchestra?
Stop. I'm sitting here racking my brain trying to figure out how I can shoehorn an Ovaltine joke in here because that's my genuine favorite Seinfeld bit. Why do they call it Ovaltine if it comes in a round can?
It's so dumb.
Anyways.
Yeah, I also like one thing that I really like that's just sort of like a set dressing is that the engine on the ship is a beach. Because that uses like hydraulic pressure.
Oh, I didn't clock that. Yeah. I was distracted by the nature taking over everything inside.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, oh, that's kind of fun.
Yeah, because they had to feed herbivores, and so they had lots of plant life. But all the caretakers of the plant life died. So instead,
I'm surprised they didn't whip out like, oh no, there's a large carnivorous man-eating plant.
Yeah,
I'm kind of glad they didn't, but surprised they did.
Yeah,
not.
I did like, but like I said, when they go to, they teleport to a beach briefly, and they think they're on Earth. They think that they're just on some planet for a moment, but then come to find out when Brian pulls a shovel out of his pocket, because what man doesn't carry a trowel?
Yeah, Zach, do you carry a trowel?
Yes, but not where you'd think.
Huh. Note to self. Inspect Zach's butthole.
I said not where you'd think.
Inspect Zach's taint for trowel.
Damn it. I've been found out. Note to self, move trowel. But when he's digging in the sand, eventually they find that not even like a foot deep into it, there's just a metal floor.
Yeah, it's like 8 inches down.
Yeah. And it's because the water was put into this ship so they could use hydraulic power. So basically there's just like water pumps that you would normally because that's a real thing. There are pumps that use the tides to create energy. And so
sexy,
but you need a lot of water to do that. So you can really only do that in oceans and really large bodies of water. So they had to take a lot of water to get tides. And I think that's just a fun idea. I think it's a fun, like, it's a sci-fi concept that's rooted in some level of reality. And I think that's a really, like, neat concept.
Yeah.
But, you know, for most part, I think this episode's just kind of a simple, enjoyable little thing.
Like, conceptually, it is what it says it is. It's dinosaurs on a spaceship. Yeah. What do you want?
Yeah, you're going to be on, like, you're going to be as on board with that based on the title as you will be by the end of the episode.
Yeah. The everything else that's in it is just kind of justifications for it.
It feels like they came up with the title Dinosaurs on a Spaceship and then like figured out what the consequences of dinosaurs on a spaceship would be and then just threw in some extra characters for fun.
Well, because I also do like it tying back into the reality that we know to be true, that the Silurians were on Earth far long before the humans were.
Mm-hmm.
So if the Silurians built an ark to save their planet, then of course it would have dinosaurs.
Yeah, because they're dinosaur people. It'd be like us saving dogs.
Yeah.
Which makes sense. Do you think that T-Rexes are Silurians' best friend?
I think genuinely if they were going to have an animal that is a best friend, it would not be a T-Rex just because they're very big, but it would have to be something a little bit smaller.
Mm.
Like there were these little scavenging dinosaurs, and I'm blanking out on the names, but they would basically, if they were like T-Rex's lackeys. Like, they would follow them around and, like, reap off the carnage. So I'm sure that if there were some kind of, like, hominid at that time, those would absolutely domesticate themselves so they could benefit off of the people's hunting.
I feel like maybe T-Rexes would get along with them, though, because they have a big head and little arms. So they might need help.
A big head and little arms. I'm not so sure this plan was well thought through. Master.
One little thing that I think is kind of weird because it's just a goof. Like there's no story reason for it. When they shut the two robots down, they sing Daisy, Daisy, give me your answer. Do or Bicycle Built for Two is what the song is. But they see, you know, this is a reference to 2001: A Space Odyssey. That's all that is.
Oh, it is.
Yeah, because that's when HAL 9000 gets shut down.
I've never seen that.
OK, I'm surprised you haven't seen that bit before, because it's a heavily parodied scene.
I haven't.
In the movie.
I'm an anomaly, dude. The only thing that I know for like to be true is that HAL the robot, space conductor, ship steerer is also very prominent in WALL-E. And that's a direct like.
Yeah, there's
link between Space Odyssey and WALL-E.
Yeah, the steering wheel is definitely inspired by HAL 9000 in that one. But in 2001: A Space Odyssey, HAL 9000 is this super advanced computer, and the first thing they ever installed on this computer was the song "Bicycle Built for Two."
Okay.
And so at the end of the movie, when the computer has gone crazy and they have to shut him down.
Spoilers.
As he gets shut down, he starts going, Daisy, Daisy, give me your answer to. And the robots in this episode also do that. They just throw that in, I guess, because they didn't know what else to have them say.
I mean, it is cheeky.
Yeah.
That's like anytime you're in, or like anytime I am in a space themed something.
Mm-hmm.
An attraction and an amusement park or a maze and a haunted attraction type something.
Mm-hmm.
I'm always, always looking out for 42 because, you know, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy and all that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We may have to watch some of Douglas Adams episodes of Doctor Who at some point.
Ooh. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That might be because he wrote some classic episodes. So we might have to go back and do that.
Are you nuts? You've been gatekeeping this knowledge from me.
It was on my short list at one point.
Oh, my God. Patrons, are you nuts for not telling him to make me watch those sooner? Putting this on them now, too, buddy.
Well, next episode, we get something very different because they wanted one of the things Stephen Moffat wanted was he wanted every episode of this season to feel very different from one another.
Yeah.
That's why the first episode takes place in this like grungy Dalek asylum that's also like in the frozen tundra. And now this one takes place entirely on a spaceship full of dinosaurs.
That is vaguely jungle themed.
Our next one is going to be an Old West episode in a town called Mercy.
Ooh. And Zach, I'm afraid to tell you something. This couch ain't big enough for three of us.
What? What could that mean?
Well, I guess we'll have to find out on the next episode of Who is My Doctor?
Who is my doctor? Who is indeed? Did we just do that Australian twins thing?
I sent you the video where somebody put that over their cats, right?
Yes. You heard that right. Next week, we will have another guest episode, but this time it is a guest of Cassie's choosing. Who could it be? I hope you're all looking forward to that. If you are, make sure you are subscribed to this podcast wherever you're listening now. You can also come check us out on our website, wimdpod.com, WIMDPOD.com, to find everywhere you can subscribe if you're listening somewhere weird for some reason, or to find all of our social medias if you want to send us a message on Twitter or Blue Sky or Threads or wherever. If you'd like to support us directly, you can find us on Patreon at patreon.com/whoismydoctor, where for as little as $1 a month, you can get episodes of this podcast a whole week early. Special thanks go to our Big Daddy Dalek patrons, Andrew Blewett, David Gansel, and Travis Aiken. Next week, we're headed down to the Old West, so we'll see you next Tuesday, because around these parts, Tuesdays be whose days, partner.